Party politics is a rough game. Good Lord! Partisanship doesn't figure in a case like this. The old man cocked an eyebrow. You think not, eh? I finally managed to ask him the question I had come into his office to ask. Where was Mary? Odd question from you, he grunted. I let it ride. He went on. Where she should be, guarding the president. We went first to a room where a joint special committee was going over evidence. It was a closed session, but the old man had passes. When we got there, they were running stereos. We slipped into seats and watched. The films were of my anthropoid friend Napoleon, the ape himself. Shots of him with a titan on his back, then close-ups of the titan. It made me sick to see it. One parasite looks like another, but I knew which one this was, and I was deeply glad it was dead. The ape gave way to me, myself. I saw myself being clamped into the chair. I hate to admit how I looked. Real funk is not pretty. A voice off-screen told what was going on. I saw them lift the titan off the ape and onto my own bare back. Then I fainted in the picture, and almost fainted again. I won't describe it, and it upsets me to tell about it. I saw myself writhe under the shocks given the titan, and I writhed too. At one point I tore my right hand free of the clamps, something I had not known, but which explained why my wrist was still not healed. And I saw the thing die. It was worth sitting through the rest. The film ended and the chairman said, "Well, gentlemen?" "Mr. Chairman, the gentleman from Indiana is recognized. Speaking without prejudice to this issue, I must say that I have seen better trick photography from Hollywood." They tittered and someone called out, "Hear, hear." I knew the ball game was gone. The head of our biolab testified. Then I found myself called to the stand. I gave my name, address, and occupation, then perfunctorily was asked a number of questions about my experience under the Titans. The questions were read from a sheet, and the chairman obviously was not familiar with them. The thing that got me was that they did not want to hear. Two of them were reading newspapers. There were only two questions from the floor. One senator said to me, "Mr. Nivens, your name is Nivens." I agreed that it was. "Mr. Nivens," he went on, "you say that you are an investigator?" "Yes." "FBI, no doubt." "No, my chief reports directly to the president." The senator smiled. "Just as I thought. Now, Mr. Nivens, you say you are an investigator, but as a matter of fact, you are an actor, are you not?" He seemed to be consulting notes. I tried to tell too much truth. I wanted to say that I had once acted one season of Summerstock, but that I was nevertheless a real, live, sure enough investigator. I got no chance. "That will do, Mr. Nivens, thank you." The other question was put to me by an elderly senator whose name I should have known. He wanted to know my views on using tax money to arm other countries, and he used the question to express his own views. My views on that subject are cloudy, but it did not matter as I did not get to express them. The next thing I knew, the clerk was saying, "Stand down, Mr. Nivens." I sat tight. "Look here," I said, "all of you. It's evident that you don't believe me and think this is a put-up job. Well, for the love of heaven, bring in the lie detector, or use the sleep test. This hearing is a joke." The chairman banged his gavel. "Stand down, Mr. Nivens." I stood. The old man had told me that the purpose of the meeting was to report out a joint resolution declaring total emergency and vesting war powers in the president. The chairman asked if they were ready to consider the resolution. One of the newspaper readers looked up long enough to say, "Mr. Chairman, I call for clearing the committee room." So we were ejected. I said to the old man, "It looks bad to this boy." "Forget it," he said. The president knew this gambit had failed when he heard the names of the committee. Where does that leave us? Do we wait for the slugs to take over Congress, too? The president goes right ahead with a message to Congress and a request for full powers. Will he get them? The old man screwed up his face. "Frankly, I don't think he stands a chance." The joint session was secret, of course, but we were present. Direct orders of the president, probably. The old man and I were on that little balcony business back of the speaker's rostrum. They opened it with full rigmarole and went through the ceremony of appointing two members from each house to notify the president. I suppose he was right outside, for he came in at once, escorted by the delegation. His guards were with him, but they were all our men. Mary was with him, too. Somebody set up a folding chair for her, right by the president. She fiddled with the notebook and handed papers to him, pretending to be a secretary. But the disguise ended there. She had it turned on full blast and looked like Cleopatra on a warm night, and as out of place as a bed in church. I could feel him stir. She got as much attention as the president did. Even the president noticed it. You could see that he wished he had left her at home, but it was too late to do anything about it without greater embarrassment. You can bet I noticed her. I caught her eye, and she gave me a long, slow, sweet smile. I grinned like a collie pup until the old man dug me in the ribs. Then I settled back and tried to behave, but I was happy. The president made a reasoned explanation of the situation. Why we knew it had to be so, and had to be done. It was as straightforward and rational as an engineering report, and about as moving. He simply stated facts. He put aside his notes at the end. "This is such a strange and terrible emergency, so totally beyond any previous experience, that I must ask very broad powers to cope with it. In some areas, martial law must be declared. Grave invasions of civil guarantees will be necessary for a time. The right of free movement must be abridged. The right to be secure from arbitrary search and seizure must give way to the right of safety for everyone. Because any citizen, no matter how respected or how loyal, may be the unwilling servant of these secret enemies. All citizens must face the loss of civil rights and personal dignities until this plague is killed. With utmost reluctance, I ask that you authorize these necessary steps." With that, he sat down. You can feel a crowd. They were made uneasy, but he did not carry them. The president of the Senate took the gavel and looked at the Senate majority leader. It had been programmed for him to propose the emergency resolution. Something slipped. I don't know whether the floor leader shook his head or signaled, but he did not take the floor. Meanwhile, the delay was getting awkward, and there were cries of, "Mr. President!" and "Order!" The Senate president passed over several others and gave the floor to a member of his own party. I recognized the man, Senator Gottlieb, a wheel horse who would vote for his own lynching if it were on his party's program. He started out by yielding to none in his respect for the Constitution, the Bill of Rights, and probably the Grand Canyon. He pointed modestly to his own long and faithful service and spoke well of America's place in history. I thought he was beating the drum while the boys worked out a new shift, when I suddenly realized that his words were adding up to meaning. He was proposing to suspend the order of business and get on with the impeachment and trial of the President of the United States. I think I tumbled to it as quickly as anyone. The senator had his proposal so decked out in ritualistic verbiage that it was a wonder that anyone noticed what he was actually saying. I looked at the old man. The old man was looking at Mary. She was looking back at him with an expression of extreme urgency. The old man snatched a pad out of his pocket, scrawled something, wadded it up, and threw it down to Mary. She caught it, opened it, and read it, and passed it to the president. He was sitting, relaxed and easy, as if one of his oldest friends were not at that moment tearing his name to shreds, and with it, the safety of the Republic. He put on his old-fashioned specs and read the note. Then he glanced unhurriedly around at the old man and lifted his eyebrows. The old man nodded. The president nudged the Senate president, who, at the president's gesture, bent over him. The president and he exchanged whispers. Gottlieb was still rumbling along about his deep sorrow, but that there came times when old friendship must give way to a higher duty, and therefore... The Senate president banged his gavel. If the senator please... Gottlieb looked startled and said, I do not yield. The senator is not asked to yield. At the request of the President of the United States, because of the importance of what you are saying, the senator is asked to come to the rostrum to speak. Gottlieb looked puzzled, but there was nothing else he could do. He walked slowly toward the front of the house. Mary's chair blocked the little stairway up to the rostrum. Instead of getting quietly out of the way, she bumbled around, turning and picking up the chair so that she got even more in the way. Gottlieb stopped and she brushed against him. He caught her arm, as much to steady himself as her. She spoke to him, and he to her, but no one else could hear the words. Finally, they got around each other, and he went on to the front of the rostrum. The old man was quivering like a dog in point. Mary looked up at him and nodded. The old man said, Take him. I was over that rail in a flying leap, as if I had been wound up like a crossbow. I landed on Gottlieb's shoulders. I heard the old man shout, Gloves, son, gloves! I did not stop for them. I split the senator's jacket with my bare hands, and I could see the slug pulsing under his shirt. I tore the shirt away, and anybody could see it. 6 stereo cameras could not have recorded what happened in the next few seconds. I slugged Gottlieb back of the ear to stop his thrashing. Mary was sitting on his legs. The president was standing over me and pointing, while shouting, There! There! Now you can all see! The Senate president was standing stupefied, waggling his gavel. The Congress was just a mob. Men yelling and women screaming. Above me, the old man was shouting orders to the presidential guards as if he were standing on a bridge. We had this in our favor. Doors were locked, and there were no armed and disciplined men present except the old man's own boys. Sergeants at arms, surely, but what are they? One elderly congressman pulled a hog leg out of his coat that must have been a museum piece. But that was a mere incident. Between the guns of the guards and the pounding of the gavel, something like order was restored. The president started to talk. He told them that an amazing accident had given them a chance to see the true nature of the enemy. And he suggested that they file past and see for themselves one of the Titans from Saturn's largest moon. Without waiting for their consent, he pointed to the front row and told them to come up. They came. I squatted back out of the way and wondered what was accidental about it. With the old man, you can never tell. Had he known that Congress was infested? I rubbed a bruised knee and wondered. Mary stayed on the platform. About 20 had filed by, and a female congressman had gotten hysterics, when I saw Mary signal the old man again. This time, I was a hair ahead of his order. I might have had quite a fight if two of the boys had not been close by. This one was young and tough, an ex-Marine. We laid him beside Gottlieb. And again, the old man and the president and the Senate president, shouting their lungs out, restored order. Then it was inspection and search, whether they liked it or not. I patted the women on the back as they came by and caught one. I thought I had caught another, but it was an embarrassing mistake. She was so blubber fat that I guessed wrong. Mary spotted two more. Then there was a long stretch, 300 or more, with no jackpots. It was soon evident that some were hanging back. Don't let anyone tell you that congressmen are stupid. It takes brains to get elected, and it takes a practical psychologist to stay elected. Eight men with guns were not enough. 11, counting the old man, Mary and me. Most of the slugs would have gotten away if the whip of the House had not organized help. With our assistance, we caught 13. 10 alive. Only one of the hosts was badly wounded. But the Congress of the United States has not been such a shambles since Jefferson Davis announced his momentous decision. No, not even after the bombing. So, the president got the authority he needed, and the old man was his de facto chief of staff. At least we could move fast and effectively. Oh, yes? Did you ever try to hurry a project through bureaucracy? Directives have to be implemented, agencies have to be coordinated, and everything has got to go to the files. The old man had a simple enough campaign in mind. It could not be the straightforward quarantine he had proposed when the infection was limited to the Des Moines area. Before we could fight back, we had to locate them. But government agents couldn't search 200 million people. The people had to do it themselves. Schedule Bareback was to be the first phase of the implementation of Operation Parasite, which makes me talk like a bureaucrat. Never mind. The idea was that everybody, was to peel to the waist and stay peeled until all titans were spotted and killed. Oh, women could have halter strings across their backs, but a parasite could not hide under a bra string. We whipped up a visual presentation to go with the stereocast speech the president would make to the nation. Fast work had saved 7 of the parasites we had flushed in the sacred halls of Congress, and now they were alive on animal hosts. We could show them, and we could show the less grisly parts of the film taken of me. The president himself would appear in the cast in shorts, and models would demonstrate what the well-underdressed citizen would wear this season. Including the metal head-to-spine armor, which was intended to protect a person even if a parasite got to him in his sleep. We got it ready in one black coffee night, and the president's riders had his lines ready for him. The smash finish was to show Congress in session, discussing the emergency, and every man, woman, and page boy showing a bare back to the camera. With 28 minutes left until stereocast time, the president got a call from up the street. I was present. The old man had been with the president all night, and had kept me around for chores. Mary was there, of course. The president was her special charge. We were all in shorts. Schedule bareback had already started in the White House. The only ones who looked comfortable in the get-up were Mary, who can wear anything, the colored doorman, who carried himself like a Zulu king, and the president himself, whose dignity could not be touched. When the call came in, the president did not bother to cut us out of his end of the conversation. "Speaking," he said. Presently, he added, "Do you feel certain?" "Very well, John. What do you advise?"
"I see."
"No, I don't think that would work. I had better come up the street. Tell them to be ready." He pushed back the phone, his face still serene, and turned to an assistant. "Tell them to hold up the broadcast." He turned to the old man. "Come, Andrew. We must go to the Capitol." He sent for his valet and retired into a dressing room adjoining his office. When he came out, he was formally dressed for a state occasion. He offered no explanation. The old man raised an eyebrow but said nothing, and I did not dare say anything. The rest of us stayed in our goose-flesh specials, and so we went to the Capitol. It was a joint session, the second in less than 24 hours. We trooped in, and I got that no-pants-in-church nightmare feeling, for the congressmen and senators were dressed as usual. Then I saw that the page boys were in shorts without shirts and felt somewhat better. I still don't understand it. It seems that some people would rather be dead than lose dignity, with senators high on the list. Congressmen, too. A congressman is a man who wants to be a senator. They had given the president all the authority he had asked for. Schedule bareback itself had been discussed and approved, but they did not see where it applied to them. After all, they had been searched and cleaned out. Congress was the only group in the country known to be free of titans. Maybe some saw the holes in the argument, but no one wanted to be the first in a public striptease. Face and dignity are indispensable to an office holder. They sat tight, fully dressed. When the president took the rostrum, he simply looked at them until he got dead silence. Then, slowly, calmly, he started taking off his clothes. He stopped when he was bare to the waist. He had me worried for a moment. I think he had the others worried. He then turned slowly around, lifting his arms. At last he spoke. "I did that," he said, "so that you might see for yourself that your chief executive is not a prisoner of the enemy." He paused. "But how about you?" That last word was flung at them. The president punched a finger at the junior whip. "Mark Cummings, how about you? Are you a loyal citizen, or are you a zombie spy? Get up. Get your shirt off." "Mr. President," it was Charity Evans, from the state of Maine, looking like a pretty school teacher. She stood, and I saw that, while she was fully dressed, she was in evening dress. Her gown reached to the floor, but was cut as deep as could be above. She turned like a mannequin. In back, the dress ended at the base of her spine. In front, it came up in two well-defined scallops. "Is this satisfactory, Mr. President?" "Quite satisfactory, madam." Cummings was on his feet and fumbling at his jacket. His face was scarlet. Someone stood up in the middle of the hall. It was Senator Gottlieb. He looked as if he should have been in bed. His cheeks were grey and sunken. His lips showed cyanosis. But he held himself erect and with incredible dignity, followed the president's example. His old-fashioned underwear was a one-piece job. He wriggled his arms out and let it dangle over his calluses. Then he, too, turned all the way around, on his back, scarlet against his fish-white flesh, was the mark of the parasite. He spoke. Last night I stood here and said things I would rather have been flayed alive than utter. But last night I was not my own master. Today I am. Can you not see that Rome is burning? Suddenly he had a gun in his hand. Up on your feet, you ward healers, you courthouse loafers. 2 minutes to get your duds off and show your bare back. Then I shoot. Men close to him sprang up and tried to grab his arm. But he swung the gun around like a fly swatter, smashing one of them in the face. I had my own out, ready to back his play. But it wasn't necessary. They could see that he was as dangerous as an old bull, and they backed away. It hung in balance. Then they started shucking clothes like Duca boys. One man bolted for a door. He was tripped. No, he was not wearing a parasite. But we did catch three. After that, the show went on the channels. 10 minutes late, and Congress started the first of its bareback sessions. Lock your doors. Close the dampers on your fireplaces. Never enter a dark place. Be wary of crowds. A man wearing a coat is an enemy. Shoot. We should have had every Titan in the country spotted and killed in a week. I don't know what more we could have done. In addition to a steady barrage of propaganda, the country was being quartered and sectioned from the air, searching for flying saucers on the ground. Our radar screen was on full alert for unidentified blips. Military units, from airborne troops to guided rocket stations, were ready to smear any that landed. Then, nothing happened. There was no work for them to do. The thing fizzled like a damp firecracker. In the uncontaminated areas, people took off their shirts, willingly or reluctantly, looked around them, and found no parasites. They watched their newscasts, and wondered and waited for the government to tell them that the danger was over. But nothing happened, and both laymen and local officials began to doubt the necessity of running around the streets in sunbathing costumes. We had shouted wolf, and no wolf came. The contaminated areas? The reports from the contaminated areas were not materially different from the reports from other areas. Our stereocast and the follow-ups did not reach those areas. Back in the days of radio, it could not have happened. The Washington station where the cast originated could have blanketed the country. But stereo video rides wavelengths so short that horizon-to-horizon relay is necessary, and local channels must be squirted out of local stations. It's the price we pay for plenty of channels and high-resolution pictures. In the infected areas, the slugs controlled the local stations. The people never heard the warning. But in Washington, we had every reason to believe they had heard the warning. Reports came back from, well, Iowa, for example, just like those from California. The governor of Iowa was one of the first to send a message to the president, promising full cooperation. The Iowa State Police were already cruising the roads, he reported, stopping everybody and requiring them to strip to the waist. Air travel above Iowa was stopped for the duration of the emergency, just as the president had urged. There was even a relayed stereo of the governor addressing his constituents, bare to the waist. He faced the camera, and I wanted to tell him to turn around. But presently they cut to another camera, and we had a close-up of a bare back, while the governor's voice went on cheerfully, urging all citizens to work with the police. If any place in the Union was a pest house of slugs, Iowa should have been it. Had they evacuated Iowa and concentrated on heavier centers of population? We were gathered in a conference room off the president's office. The president had kept the old man with him. I tagged along, and Mary was still on watch. Secretary of Security Martinez was there, as well as the Supreme Chief of Staff, Air Marshal Rexton. There were others from the president's fishing cabinet, but they weren't important. The president watched the cast from Iowa and turned to the old man. "Well, Andrew, I thought Iowa was a place we would have to fence off." The old man grunted. Marshal Rexton said, "As I figured. Mind you, I have not had much time to evaluate this situation. They have gone underground. We may have to comb every inch of every suspicious area." The old man grunted again. "Combing Iowa corn shock by corn shock does not appeal to me." "How else would you tackle it, sir?" "Figure your enemy. He can't go underground. He can't live without a host." "Very well. Assuming that it is true, how many parasites would you say are in Iowa?" "Damn it, how should I know? They didn't take me into their confidence." "Suppose we make a top estimate. If..." The old man interrupted him. "You've got no basis for an estimate. Can't you folks see that the Titans have won another round?" "Eh?" "You just heard the governor. They let us look at his back, or somebody's back. Did you notice that he didn't turn around in front of the camera?" "But he did," someone said. "I saw him." "I certainly had the impression that I saw him turn," said the president slowly. "You are suggesting that Governor Packer is himself possessed?" "Correct. You saw what you were meant to see. There was a camera cut just before he was fully turned. People hardly ever notice them. They are used to them. Depend on it, Mr. President. Every message out of Iowa is faked." The president looked thoughtful. Secretary Martinez shook his head emphatically and said, "Impossible. Grant that the governor's message could have been faked. A clever character actor could have faked it. Remember the inaugural address in the crisis of 96, when the president-elect was laid up with pneumonia? Granted that one such cast could be faked. We've had our choice of dozens of casts from Iowa. How about that street scene in Des Moines? Don't tell me you can fake hundreds of people dashing around stripped to their waists. Or do your parasites practice mass hypnotic control?" "They can't that I know of," conceded the old man. "If they can, we might as well throw in the towel and admit that the human race has been superseded. But what made you think that the cast came from Iowa?" "Eh? Well, damn it, sir, it came over the Iowa Channel." "Proving what? Did you read any street signs? It looked like any typical street in a downtown retail district. Never mind what city the announcer told you it was. What city was it?" The secretary let his mouth hang open. "I've got fairly close to the camera eye the detectives are supposed to have. I let that picture run through my mind. And not only could I not tell what city, I could not even place the part of the country. It could have been Memphis, Seattle, or Boston. or none of them, allowing for special cases like Canal Street in New Orleans or Denver's Civic Center, the downtown districts in American cities are as standardized as barbershops. Never mind, the old man went on. I couldn't tell, and I was looking for landmarks. The explanation is simple. The Des Moines station picked up a scheduled bareback street scene from some city not contaminated and rechanneled it under their own commentary. They chopped out anything that would localize it, and we swallowed it. Gentlemen, this enemy knows us, inside and out. This campaign has been planned in great detail, and they are ready to outwit us in almost any move we can make. Aren't you being an alarmist, Andrew? Said the president. There is another possibility, that the Titans have moved somewhere else. They are still in Iowa, the old man said flatly. But you won't prove it with that thing. He gestured at the stereo tank. Secretary Martinez squirmed. This is ridiculous, he exclaimed. You are saying that we can't get a correct report out of Iowa, as if it were occupied territory. That is what it is. But I stopped off in Des Moines 2 days ago, coming back from Alaska. Everything was normal. Mind you, I grant the existence of your parasites, though I haven't seen one. But let's find them where they are and root them out, instead of dreaming up fantasies. The old man looked tired, and I felt tired. I wondered how many ordinary people were taking it seriously, if this was what we ran into at the top. Finally, the old man replied, "Control the communications of a country, and you control the country. That's elementary. You had better take fast steps, Mr. Secretary, or you won't have any communications left." But I was merely... You root them out, the old man said rudely. I've told you they were in Iowa and in New Orleans, and a dozen other spots. My job is finished. You are a Secretary of Security. You root them out. He stood up and said, Mr. President, I've had a long pull for a man my age. When I lose sleep, I lose my temper. Could I be excused? Certainly, Andrew. He had not lost his temper, and I think the president knew it. He doesn't lose his temper. He makes other people lose theirs. Before the old man could say goodnight, Secretary Martinez interrupted. Wait a moment. You've made some flat-footed statements. Let's check up on them. He turned to the chief of staff. Rexton?
Yes, sir?
That new post near Des Moines, Fort something or other, named after, what's his name? Fort Patton? That's it. Well, let's not dally. Get them on the command circuit. With visual, put in the old man. With visual, of course. And we'll show this. I mean, we'll get the true situation in Iowa. The air marshal handed a by your leave, sir, to the president. Went to the stereo tank and patched in with Security General Headquarters. He asked for the officer of the watch at Fort Patton, Iowa. Shortly thereafter, the stereo tank showed the inside of a military communication center. Filling the foreground was a young officer. His rank and corps showed on his cap, but his chest was bare. Martinez turned triumphantly to the old man. You see? I see. Now to make certain. Lieutenant? Yes, sir. The young fellow looked awestruck and kept glancing from one famous face to another. Perception and biangle were in sync. The eyes of the image looked where they seemed to look, as if he were actually sitting in the receiver tank. Stand up and turn around, Martinez continued. Why, certainly, sir. He seemed puzzled, but he did so. And it took him almost out of scan. We could see his bare back, up to about the short ribs. No higher. "Confound it!" shouted Martinez. "Sit down and turn around." "Yes, sir." The youth seemed flustered. He leaned over the desk and added, "Just a moment while I widen the view angle, sir." The picture suddenly melted, and rippling rainbows chased across the tank. The young officer's voice was still coming over the audio channel. "There, is that better, sir?" "Damn it, we can't see a thing." "You can't? Just a moment, sir." We could hear him breathing heavily. Suddenly the tank came to life, and I thought for a moment that we were back at Fort Paxton. But it was a major on the screen this time, and the place looked larger. "Supreme Headquarters," the image announced. "Communications Officer of the Watch, Major Donovan." "Major," Martinez said in controlled tones, "I was hooked in with Fort Patton. What happened?" "Yes, sir, I was monitoring it. We've had a slight technical difficulty on that channel. We'll put your call through again in a moment." "Well, hurry." "Yes, sir." The tank rippled and went empty. The old man stood up again. "Call me when you've cleared up that slight technical difficulty. Meantime, I'm going to bed." If I have given the impression that Secretary Martinez was stupid, I am sorry. Everyone had trouble at first believing what the slugs could do. You have to see one.